Eichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is the 13th tape in the series entitled, How to Develop a Love Towards God, recorded live at Eichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning, everyone. It's certainly very nice to be back home. And let me welcome all of you after this lapse of time. We are in the middle of Tanya Perek Gimel, chapter 3 of Tanya, on page 14, Daf Zayin Amud Beis. In the last class that we had before Pesach, class number 12, I believe it was, the Alter Rebbe discussed the two first faculties that exist within the human soul. And in this parak, he's referring to the Nefesh HaLakis, to the divine, godly soul that exists within every Jew. And he elaborates on the first, explaining the first two attributes and faculties that this soul possesses. The first one is called Chachma, which means conception, and the second, Bina, which is comprehension. We discussed this at length in the previous shiur, so I will not repeat it with all its details, but just briefly, the point was that Chachma is the first flash of intellect. It is the seminal and inner point of an idea, which this seminal point of an idea already includes within it all the details, all the ramifications of the idea, but nevertheless, the details are still concentrated and obscured when they are in the realm of Chachma. Chachma is that flash of wisdom which is the beginning of every intellectual experience and revelation. We gave the example of how a person may be striving to answer an intellectual dilemma or question which is puzzling him, and suddenly he realizes there is a flash, there is a revelation. He feels almost with intuition that the question can be answered along a particular line of reasoning. At that moment of illumination, he is yet unaware exactly how the particular question is answered. But he knows the fact that he has discovered an adequate solution to his problem. Then, afterwards comes Bina. Comprehension, understanding, where at that moment Bina understands, clarifies, crystallizes, Bina compartmentalizes, Bina takes all the details of Chachma and develops it, nurtures it, reveals it, and creates a beautiful mansion of intellectual thought. Until Bina, the ideas are still, as mentioned, concealed and obscured in the point of Chachma. But Bina builds a whole edifice with many aspects and parts and dimensions and chambers. In Bina we have the idea in all its length and all its breadth. The entire idea in its totality becomes manifest. We discuss then what is the reason for this process in the human intellectual experience. So the reason is because whenever you understand something, whenever you comprehend something, there is a unity of two realities. The human being, the comprehender, and the concept, the idea which he is comprehending. And the question that exists whenever there is a unity of two entities that are distinct and are separate, and sometimes remote from each other, totally remote, the question is, which one becomes subservient to the other? Which one dominates in the relationship of two parties? Either one party dominates, or the other one dominates, or they both compromise and leave room for each other. So when the human being comes close and connects with an idea which is outside of him, a new idea that he did not understand before, that he did not comprehend before, that he did not have a relationship with before, there will always be two stages in the intellectual experience. Stage number one is Chachma. In that realm, in that stage, it is the idea, it is the concept that dominates the relationship, and the human being is submerged and subservient to the concept. In Bina, it's vice versa. in being as the human being and his intellectual faculties that dominate, and the concept is subservient and submerged within his intellectual faculties. In the above-mentioned metaphor, we see it. Why is it that you're learning something and you do not understand what it says? You just don't understand it. So you read it again, and you still don't understand it, and a third time, and a fourth time, and you might still fail to have a clear-cut understanding of what is going on over here. So what you do again is, if you do not give up, you read it again with total concentration, and then suddenly there is a flash. Suddenly there's a revelation. Suddenly you sense, I have the answer. What went on? What happened over here? Why is it that you did not understand it? Why is it that you read a specific text, whether it's from Torah or another field of wisdom, Lahavdil, and you did not understand it? You understand the words, you're familiar with the language, you're familiar with the vocabulary, but nevertheless you have no understanding of it. The reason is quite simple. Because your framework of wisdom, your cognitive faculties, does not give room for this concept. And your mode of understanding, your intellectual experience, is not open to this idea. Therefore, there are some ideas that immediately will enter, because throughout your life, throughout your intellectual experience, you came across such ideas and they suit your intellectual character. But this idea is totally new, therefore you cannot comprehend it. So what has to happen over here? What has to happen is suspension. The human being must suspend himself and his intellectual faculties. The human being begins to concentrate on the text. And what does concentration mean? He suspends everything else. He suspends even the awareness that he is suspending his awareness. And he becomes totally hooked on to the idea he's trying to understand. And then he allows the idea to reveal itself. He allows the idea to enter into his psyche, into his intellectual awareness. That is the faculty of Chachma. Chachma is that deep awareness that there is a truth that transcends the human being's faculty. And the ability to nullify and abnegate yourself and allow yourself to experience intellectually that idea. When you do that, now something new, something which did not have a relationship with you, something before which nullified you, which overwhelmed you, which was not in you, you can now experience. As long as you do not do that, you remain who you are, and in that sense, you cannot understand something that's totally new to you, that's totally beyond the parameters of your understanding till the present day. Chachma kayachma, the energy of nothingness, the ability to soar beyond yourself, the ability to nullify. It is the potential for transcendence, where the human being realizes there are truths that are beyond him, and he connects, he suspends everything he knows about himself to that truth. He allows the truth to enter. Bina, the human being assumes another role. In Bina, what happens is self-assertion. Instead of suspension of your own faculties, what happens is quite the contrary. You take the concept and you attempt to internalize it and permeate it, bring it in within the parameters of your intellectual faculties. Let's use the yeshivish terminology. There is a very two coin phrases in Talmudic study which are known as Gavra and Chefta. Gavra means the man, the human being, and Chefta means the object. Perhaps we could say that in Chachma, the Gavra is a din in the Chefta. In Chachma, the human being, the comprehender, the conceiver, is submerged in the Chefta, in the object, in the idea that he's trying to comprehend. In the level of Chachma, the human being's faculties are suspended, and what is sensed, what is felt, what is experienced, is the idea in its full intensity, in its full purity, as is. In Bina, it's vice versa. In Bina, the Chefta becomes a din in the Gavra. Over here, the object, the idea, the intellectual concept becomes submerged within the parameters of the human being's understanding. Therefore, the intensity, the clarity that exists in Chachma will never exist in Bina. But nevertheless, on the other hand, the relationship to the human being, the clarity within our day-to-day realms of our understanding is a dimension that exists in Bina and does not exist in Chachma. Chachma you will never remember. Bina you will always remember. Chachma is beyond you and Bina is within you. In every intellectual experience, both stages are crucial. Chachma is crucial for conceiving a new idea. Chachma is the essence. Chachma is when you grasp the essence of the idea, the new concept. In Chachma, everything is included. But then, if it remains only by that, ultimately it will remain aloof and sublime and will not become part of your intellectual internal experience. Bina is stage number two, which is also crucial, and the function of Bina is to develop, to elucidate, to clarify, to articulate, to define, to discriminate, to divide, to compartmentalize, to compare, to measure, to categorize, and to weave a beautiful and skillful tapestry of ideas and thoughts. The reason why I use so many words by Bina and so few words by Chachma is because that is exactly the difference between Chachma and Bina. Chachma will never include many words. Chachma will always be a flash of concise wisdom. That's what Chachma is about. Chachma is when the idea plays the main role, and Bina is when you play the main role, and therefore details are crucial to Bina. By the way, it's interesting to note that Chachma and Bina are not just two intellectual energies that exist within the brain, but also in the physical brain. There is the chamber of Chachma and the chamber of Bina. The chamber of Chachma is known as the creative part of the brain, and the chamber of Bina is the verbal part of the brain. Because Chachma is always connected with a creative mind, and Bina is with verbalizing and defining and articulating. This is, briefly, what we discussed in the previous class regarding the two first faculties of the divine nefesh, of the nefesh halakis, which consists of 10 faculties, as he said in the beginning of the parak, and he began discussing the first two, Chachma and Bina. Now we will continue inside. As mentioned, we are holding Daf Zayin Amid Beis on the fourth line from the top, four lines from the end of the line, by the words of a Hein Haim. The Hein Haim Ava'im. The Alter Rebbe now says, V'hein heim, they, Chachma and Bina, are Ava'im. They are the very father and mother, Hameilida is Avas Hashem, V'yir'asa Yopachadai, which give birth to the love of Hashem, and to the awe, Yira, and dread of Hashem. Chachma and Bina are called a father and a mother. And the main reason for this is due to the relationship of a father and a mother to the offspring which results from them. The father is the one who produces and releases a substance which includes in it all the details of the future fetus, but in a very concentrated and obscured manner. The father is the one who generates and releases a fluid which is like a seminal idea. And it is the wife, the mother, who takes that, nurtures it, develops it into a beautiful child, which consists of many of limbs, organs, sinews, bones, flesh, blood, and so on and so forth, and ultimately gives birth to a child who becomes an independent human being to grow up and live a life. When you're talking about in the experience of one soul, so Chachma is known as the father, Abba, Av. That is what Chachma is about. Chachma is when the nefesh, the soul of the human being, intellectually experiences a intellectual revelation, a flash of wisdom, a seminal idea. Then Chachma transmits it to her wife, so to speak, to the mother, to Bina. Bina takes that, nurtures it, develops it, and that takes a while. Pregnancy, like 7 months or 9 months, because that's again, Chachma happens in a split of a moment. Bina always occupies time. The preparation for Chachma might occupy time, but the experience of Chachma, as all of you who experienced it can be aware of, is a moment experience. Bina, on the contrary, takes time. It's the mother. So they are the father and the mother. And what do they give birth to? They give birth to a child. What is the child in this case? Since we are discussing the divine soul, we are not talking about the animal soul. The animal soul, the Alter Rebbe will discuss its faculties in chapter 6. In chapter 3, he's discussing the faculties of the divine soul. The essence of the divine soul is its aspiration and its connection, its bond to the godly reality. The divine soul gravitates in all its faculties, attributes, energies towards its divine source. The complete persona of the divine soul is a godly, holy, sanctified persona. Thus, the Chachma and the Bina of the divine soul are godly oriented. And the child they produce are the love of Hashem and the awe, the Yira and the Pachad, the awe and the dread of Hashem. And now the Alter Rebbe will go on to explain in a more specific manner how that process occurs. But before that, I just wanted to point out an interesting factor, and that is, if you realize over here, the terminology the author uses is Ahavas Hashem, v'yir'asa yopachad. So the word Yira precedes the word Pachad. If you'll turn to the first page, Dav Zayin Amid Aleph, in the beginning of Perek Gimel, the second line from the bottom, the Alter Rebbe says, V'hamidai sein Ahavas Hashem upachadai v'yir'asa. Over there, Yira follows Pachat. Over here, Pachat follows Yira. Now, any sane author can be questioned. Why change the order in the very same chapter, several lines away? Certainly, when you're dealing with an author like Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, but more importantly, when you're dealing with his work called the Tanya. As mentioned in the early classes when we started the Shir, that Alter Rebbe was extremely meticulous about the vocabulary, the choice of words, and even the spelling of every single word and letter transcribed in his book of Tanya. The Sefer took him 20 years of his life. 20 years he wrote the Sefer, revising it, editing it, correcting it, and going over chapter after chapter, inserting a word, deleting a word, and so on and so forth. Thus, regarding the Tanya, the meticulousness which the author is known of, generally in his books, is accelerated so much more. So these issues are extremely important. A choice of words and a change of order. So briefly, the explanation is, what is the difference between Yira and Pachat? The Torah and the conclusion of Parshas Ekev and Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, Pachat chem umayra achem yitein Hashem alek Hashem, al pnei kol ha'aretz. Your pachad and your meira, your yira, Hashem, yitin Hashem alakechem, Hashem will lay al pnei kol ha'aretz upon all the land. So Rashi asks a question, va'alei pachad hu meira? Pachad and meira are identical. Why does Moshe say pachad chem and meira achem? And Rashi explains, ala pachad chem ala kreivim, o meira achem ala harachaykem. Pachad refers to the people that are near, and Yira refers to the people that are distant. Pachad loshen be'isas pisaim. Pachad denotes a sudden fright. Meira loshen daiga miyamim rabim. The word meira denotes anxiety of many days. In other words, people who are distant and dread a specific event or another human being or an experience, that would be defined as Yira. Someone who is close and experiences head-on this phenomenon that is causing him anxiety, that would be called pachad. So pachad, in other words, is a much more emotional experience than yira. Yira means an awe which is felt for the most part intellectually. So when you're distant from the event, but you know it's coming, you hear about it, you understand it, you will be overtaken with a feeling of yira. Pachad, however, denotes a dread which is felt in a very real, close manner. It is much more emotional as it is felt in one's heart. This is why at the beginning of the Perek, where the emotions are enumerated and explained in a general way, Pachad precedes Yira. For Pachad, the feeling of dread in one's heart is a truer emotion than that of the intellectual Yira. Here, however, where the author is dealing with the emotions as they are born from the intellect, with the process of evolution, from father and mother to offspring, Yira precedes Pachat, for only after the emotion is first formed in the mind, at which stage it is Yira, does it then descend to the heart as a reality of Pachat. And now the Alter Rebbe specifies and enumerates this concept of the transmission between the father and the mother to a child which is born. Let's continue. Ki hine haseichel shebenefesh hamaskelus. For when the intellect in the rational faculty of the soul, kishemizbeinenu maimik ma'ed begdulus Hashem, when the intellect which the soul possesses deeply contemplates and immerses itself exceedingly in the greatness of Hashem, specifically, Eichum Mamali Kalam, when the intellect contemplates and meditates about the fact how He, Hashem, fills all the worlds, V'seiviv Kalalmin, and when he further contemplates how He, Hashem, encompasses all the worlds, and then he further contemplates another aspect of Hashem's greatness, how V'kula Kamei Kiloi Chashiv, how in His presence all creation is considered as naught. As a consequence of this deep contemplation, what occurs? Noildav in his Eirira Midas Yiras Haraimim was B'meicho Yimachshavti. Upon contemplating and immersing oneself in any of the above-mentioned aspects of Hashem's greatness, the Mida, the emotion of awe for the divine majesty will be born and aroused in one's mind and thought. Leira v'lihizbeishish migdolasi yizbarech, to fear and to be humbled before His blessed greatness, she'ein lo seif v'tachlis, which is without end or limit, upachad Hashem b'liboy. And there will also be born a pachad, a dread, a fear, and a awe of Hashem in his heart. V'shuv, next, the Alter Rebbe continues, after this, following this experience, his contemplation will give birth to another emotion in the human experience. Yislaiv liboy, his heart will glow ba'ava azak risveyesh, with an intense love of Hashem like fiery flames. Bachasheka, with a passion. Bachafetza, with a desire. Shukai, longing. V'nefesh keika, and a yearning soul. Ligdulas Ein Seif Baruch Hu, towards the greatness of the Ein Seif, of the Endless One of Hashem, blessed be He. What is the Alter Rebbe telling us here? He's explaining the process. It begins with Chachma and Bina. Your Seichel, your intellectual faculty, conceives an idea and then contemplates upon it. And he uses three terms which are the object of the contemplation. Mamali Kalalmin, Soviv Kalalmin, and Kula Kamei Kaloi Chashev. These terms are first used in the Zohar, in the most basic and fundamental book of the Kabbalah, authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Yechai and his students. In the section, third section of Zohar, Daf Resh Chafei Amid Aleph, Zohar uses this term for the first time, saying, Ihu Soviv Kalalmin and Ihu Mamali Kalalmin. The third term, Kula Kamei Kaloi Chashev, is found elsewhere in Zohar, in the first section of Zohar, Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. These three terms, Memale Kalam and Sevev Kalam and Akula Kamei Kalei Chashev, are central to the teachings of Chabad Chassidus. And they will be discussed in a more elaborative manner later on in Tanya, Kula Kamei Kalei Chashev in Perek Chaf, chapter 20, the concept of Sevev Kalam in Perek Memches, and the concept of Memale Kalam in Perek Nun Aleph. In one paragraph, however, it can be defined thus. Mamali Kalalmin denotes the fact that Hashem fills all the world. It is the contemplation of the human being how Hashem animates all of creation with an imminent, divine light and life force. A life force and vitality which encloses itself in and unifies itself with each creature, and which adapts itself to the individual needs of that creature. Mamali Kalalmin is the godly energy which is defined according to the recipient's vessel vessels. And it's defined and articulated in accordance with the parameters of existence which it permeates. That is Mamali Kalalman briefly. Seviv Kalalman is the contemplation of how Hashem encompasses all the worlds, how Hashem illuminates the world with a godly force and light, which is far beyond the capacity of the world to receive, and in an internal manner, rather it affects them in an encompassing manner. Seviv is the energy transcending creation, which cannot be received and comprehended internally by and within the framework and parameters of the beings of existence. And Kula Kamei Kelei Chashiv is even further. That reality of Hashem in whose all presence, every presence, is considered naught. A brief metaphor for this would be the difference of a relationship between a father and a child, and a master and a servant. A father and a child, or even a better example would be a teacher and a student, must have a relationship where the student understands what the teacher is saying. A teacher cannot come to the student and say, understand this because I'm telling you, I'm commanding you to comprehend this. That's a lousy teacher. There are teachers like that, but they're not called teachers. A teacher has to convey the message in a manner which is accessible to the intellectual abilities and faculties of the students. Thus, the teacher might be brilliant, might be a genius, must constrict, contract, many times obscure and conceal many parts of the idea, but there is a need that it should be accepted within the framework and the parameters of the psyche, of the intellectual experience of the student. It cannot overwhelm him. He cannot be commanded to understand it. There must be an internal relationship with him, a relationship that permeates him according to his level. Then there is the relationship of a master and a servant. A master does not have to explain the servant and explain him his rationale, why he should be doing so and so. Or even many times in an employee and an employer, in a business, if you're the president of a company, if every employee has to understand every one of your rationales behind every move in your business, it's not going to be an effective business. There has to be a certain relationship of obedience where the master is the boss. There is a boss who makes the decisions and tells the employee, do so and so. There is no need that the employee should internalize and have a feeling and a very clear understanding for the master's directives. There is a relationship, but it's a relationship that could be called an overwhelming and encompassing relationship. It does not articulate itself relative to the parameters of the recipient. There are two dimensions when we talk about Hashem's relationship to the world, the relationship He chose to have with the world. There is the dimension of Mamali Kalalman, and that is how you can contemplate the involvement and relationship of Hashem and His energy to every single aspect of the universe. And furthermore, how every detail on its terms reveals another dimension of godliness. Mamali Kalalman is the contemplation in the fact that Hashem permeates and is the essence of every single experience, every single phenomenon is at the root, is the core and is the heart of reality as we know it. Mamali Kalalman is appreciating godliness within the realm of creation and every detail of our universe. Seviv Kalalman is a contemplation in another dimension where the world tells the story about a creator who totally transcends and is beyond the parameters of creation. And finally, there is Kula Kamei Kelei Chashiv, where in the first two there is a relationship. The question is if it's a relationship that's constricted and contracted in accordance with the parameters of existence, or is beyond it. But there is a relationship over here. Finally, there is the third dimension of Kula Kamei Kelei Chashiv, where one contemplates the fact how in the presence of Hashem's essence, everything else is considered naught. In Yiddishkeit, in generally, and Hasidus in particular, as mentioned, all these three concepts are extremely crucial. And Yiddishkeit synthesizes and emphasizes all of them. They are all very important. On one hand, Mamali Kalalman, Hashem is involved, and so to speak, defines His energy in accordance with every single experience of our reality. On the other hand, and simultaneously, there is Seiv of Kalaman, where Hashem transcends it all and cannot be defined by these parameters. And furthermore, there's Kula Kamei Kalei Chashiv, which is Hashem's essence that's totally beyond a relationship with the universe. When one, the Alter Rebbe says, conceives and comprehends these ideas, and of course, this is not a one-time experience where you comprehend these ideas and that's it. This is these are contemplations of a lifetime that can occupy a lifetime, years and years, but they're nevertheless accessible to every individual according to his or her level. What happens is, the father and the mother, the Chachma and Bedina, ultimately produce a child. When you contemplate, when you understand, there will be a response. You will experience it. There will be an emotional response. If you understand something well, you internalize it. You grasp it. It becomes a part of your understanding, of your awareness. There will be born, the Alter Rebbe says, number one, an emotion of awe in one's mind, pachat, a dread of Hashem in one's heart, followed, as he mentioned, with a very profound sense of love and yearning towards the greatness of the Ein Sof. Before we continue, I would just like to clarify the term Ein Sof. Ein Sof literally means endless, and is one of the most common terms used in the Kabbalistic and Hasidic teachings to define Hashem. It's probably the most concise and accurate definition of what they meant with the term Ein Sof can be found in the Sefer HaIkrim, which was authored by the great sage and philosopher Rabbi Yosef Albo, who lived in Spain in the second half of the 14th century and in the beginning of the 15th century. And in his very fundamental work, Sefer HaIkrim, he writes in the second section of the Ikrim at the conclusion of Perek Chafei, and I quote, "Ve'al zeh ramzu chachmei ha-kabbalah, b'karum Hashem Yisbarach ein sof. Lirmeis al hayeis ha-shleimus ha-nimtzayim ba-Yisbarach bilti bal-tachlis min ha-shleishetz dadin shekasavnu." What the sages of Kabbalah were referring to and indicating when they called Hashem with the term Ein Sof, was to denote the fact that the perfection that exists by Hashem is infinite and is endless from all the three dimensions we discussed earlier, which were time, quality, and quantity. That the perfection of Hashem is endless and infinite, both in time and in quality and in quantity. That's why the Kabbalists use this term Ein Sof. Now the Alter Rebbe continues further inside. V'hi klois ha-nefesh. This, what we discussed before, this experience, this emotional response in the human life, is what is meant by the term klois ha-nefesh. Klois ha-nefesh can be translated either as the culminating passion of the soul or the consuming passion of the soul. Klois has two meanings. One from the term kilyain, which means consumption, and one from the term kaloi, which means conclusion. So the Alter Rebbe is saying that this experience is what is called klois hanefesh, where the soul is consumed by a passion of yearning and love that overwhelms the soul, and the soul totally becomes culminated and consumed and submerged within this very powerful and intense yearning and passion of love. And he brings three psukim of Tehillim which convey to us this experience. Kidiksiv, it says in Tehillim, Nichsifa v'gam kolsa nafshi v'gaymer, Uksiv, another pasuk is, Tzoma nafshi l'lekim v'gaymer, and a third Uksiv, Tzoma l'cha nafshi v'gaymer. Three psukim. The first one is in Tehillim, Pei Dalet Gimel, David HaMalach says, Nichsifa v'gam kol sanafshi l'chatzreis Hashem, libi yufsari yiranenu al keil chai. My soul yearns, indeed it pines, for the courtyard of Hashem. My heart and my flesh pray fervently to the living God. The second pasuk is in Tehillim and Beis, Psukim Beis and Gimel, David HaMalach says, Ka'ayol tarei galafike mayim, Kei nafshi sa'arei geilecha alikim. Tzama nafshi leilekim lekel chai, masai avai veira pnei alikim. As the deer longs for brooks of water, So, my soul longs for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before Hashem? And finally, the third pasuk is Tehillim Samach Gimel Pasuk Beis, where David HaMelech says, Aleikim Keli Ata Shachareka, Tzama Lecha Nafshi, Kama Lecha B'sari, Be'eret Tziyav Ayev B'limayim.